glories of Nandishvara. Not far from Govardhan stands Nandishvara Hill, which is the second body of Lord Shiva. Dava trees and the blissful pastimes of Madhava fill Nandishvara with splendor. Parrots perched in Ikshepsala trees vibrate sweet music throughout the day. Beautiful peaks of varying heights decorate its skyline. An abundance of roots, herbs, and delicious fruits await the eager hands of the carefree coward boys. Just as Vamana's steps brought the Ganga down on Shiva's head, similarly, the water flowing down from its caves nourishes the fennel shrubs growing on the side of Nandishvara Hill. As gentle behavior can break the pride of a coarse man, the thick growth of yellow jinti flowers growing on its slopes overpowers the red-colored rocks of Nandishvara Hill. Lord Shiva always holds Parvati on his lap, and this mountain always holds Shilajit in its crevices. The splendid capital of Nanda Baba rests atop Nandishvara Hill. In this place, the syllable kala, deceitful, is only found in words such as mekala, shunkala, and ulukala. This syllable, however, is never used alone because there are no deceitful people in Nanda Maharaja's capital. The word matsara, my lake, is used to describe one's own lake, but it is not used to describe envy, matsarya, because this place is devoid of envy. The word dosakara, having faults, is used to describe the moon and nothing else, because there are no dosakara, faulty people in Nandishvara. The syllable mala, dirt, is used only in such words as parimala, fragrance, and shamala, blackish, but is not used separately to connote mala, or filth, because everything there is nirmala, pure and spotless. The word danda rad is used only to connote the handle of a chamara or an umbrella, but it does not connote punishment, danda, because there are no punishable people there. The word bandha, knot or bound, is used only to describe the knots of clothing, but it does not mean imprisoned, bandha, because no one here deserves to be tied up. The word panka, mud, is used only to describe cosmetics like kumkuma and chandana, because there is no mud here. The word adi, mental distress, is used only in such words as samadhi and upadhi, because there is no such thing as mental distress there. The word pitta, anguish or group, is seen only in such words as kusuma pitta, flower chaplet, because there is no agony or pain in Nandishvara. The word kutila, crooked, is used only to refer to hair locks or one's glances, because there are no crooked or deceitful people there. The word chanchalata, greedy or unsteady, is used only in relation to necklaces or the edge of clothing which move back and forth in anticipation of meeting Krishna. It is not used in reference to unsteadiness of the mind, because there are no unsteady people there. The word raga is used only to describe the reddish color of the feet and hands, and not to describe material attachments. The word madhya, middle or mediocre, is used only to describe the waste, because everything in the spiritual world is uttama, topmost. The word palita, white, is used only to describe a pala, measurement, and not to describe white hair, because no one grows old there. The word raja is used only in words describing flower pollen or the dust of a cow, and not in words like rajaguna, because there are no passionate people there. The word tama, darkness, is used only to describe darkness and not to refer to tamagun, ignorance, because ignorance cannot be found. The word katina, hard, is used to describe jewels and gold and not to refer to people because everyone is very soft and gentle. The words dvandva, pairs, argument, is used to refer to a couple of people and not to an argument because there are no arguments. The word manda, gentle, is used only to refer to the wind and not with such words as manda bhagya, unfortunate, because there are no unfortunate people there. The word shinata, thin or decrease, refers to the waists of young ladies, and it is not used elsewhere because everything is always increasing in Nandagram. The word chanchalya, fickleness, refers only to the movements of the eyes because everyone there is very sthira, or steady. The words glani, exhaustion, sangha, worry, dvainya, low misery, and vishada, lamentation, are used only to describe the ecstatic states within bhava and not elsewhere because there are no material conditions of exhaustion, worry, and so on there. The word chidra, hole or false, is used to describe the holes in a flute or a pearl, but it is not used to describe people because there are no faulty people. The word tikshnate, sharp, is used only to describe glances and nothing else. The word katuta, pungent, bitter, is used only in relation to particular spiritual emotional states and not elsewhere. The word samanya, ordinary similarity, is only used to describe the similarity of objects because there is nothing ordinary about Nandishvara. The word duryama, low quality or impurity, is used only to describe impurity in metals because there are no low-class people there. Although all the people of Nandishvara appear to exhibit temporary qualities such as youth and old age to facilitate their individual rasas, they are actually all liberated souls. Their so-called youth and old age are beyond the transformations of time. A high insurmountable wall, appearing like the glow of the dawn, surrounds all the smaller towns that comprise Nanda Maharaja's capital. The main gateways are huge, jewel-studded doors. These towns appear like festive arenas with canopies and colorful jeweled festoons hanging from the archways. Just as Suryadev has many large horses shining like diamonds, similarly, Nandishvara is full of broad, sparkling roadways. Just as the dancing of Shiva induces happiness, the sight of its many huge palaces brings joy to the heart. The many small, attractive temples appear as radiant as the rising sun. Their brilliant golden rooftops rival the splendorous yellow cloth of Lord Narayana. Beautiful strands of pearls hang from the cornices. The pinnacles of the rooftops drive away all fear. Just as the chikora birds eagerly drink the rays of the moon, similarly, the effulgence of the moonstones forming the edges of the rooftops attracts the chikora birds. The jewel-studded verandas surrounding the palaces appear like glittering mountains of jewels. The sacrificial arenas of the palaces are adorned with flower garlands that resemble Lord Shiva accompanied by his decorated wife Parvati. Amongst all the towns, Nanda's village is the chief. The town wall is made of sapphires and the houses are made of emeralds. The golden rooftops, coral pillars, crystal walls, cat's eye towers, sapphire sitting platforms, and huge doors studded with large blue sapphires astound the eye with their beauty. The stunning opulence of Nandishvara puts to shame the brilliant palaces of the demigods. When the pet parrots make friends with the sculpted parrots standing on the jeweled walls, the delighted women cannot tell them apart. In their bewilderment, they offer pomegranate seeds to the sculpted parrots instead of the real ones. Nanda Maharaj, the king of Vrindavan, resides in this town as the embodiment of paternal affection. Manifesting the pure nature of the soul, he is the essence of all auspiciousness, a veritable island amidst an ocean of bliss. By assuming the role of Krishna's father, which he plays eternally, he has become endowed with all auspicious qualities. His wife Yashoda resides in Nandishvara as the embodiment of maternal affection, acting like a desire creeper offering the darshan of Krishna. As a beautiful flower spreads its fragrance in all directions, the effulgence of Yashoda's fame illuminates her entire dynasty. Hundreds of honest and gentle coward men live in this capital city. They are not attached to their families, but they are completely attached to Krishna. Although they diligently care for their domestic animals and maintain themselves by training in milk and yogurt, they exist totally in the spiritual world. A few of the coward men are intimate relatives of Nanda Maharaj, but all of them are closely related to each other. The husbands embody religious principles, and the wives embody devotional feelings. Their sons are Krishna's coward boyfriends, and their daughters are his dearest lovers. Like the four Kumaras, all of Krishna's friends are eternally youthful. As flocks of birds decorate a forest, Krishna is surrounded by friends of the same age. Krishna and his friends have a very close and intimate relationship resembling the intimacy of flowers strung on a thread. Just as autumn lakes appear clear and joyous, and the dynasty of Brihaspati shines with glory, similarly, the blissful boyfriends of Krishna have clear eyes and brilliantly effulgent hair. With their musk and sandal-scented bodies, Krishna's associates look as beautiful as Supratika, the elephant who holds up the northeast corner. Blossoming lotuses give pleasure in the autumn season, but the smiling lotus faces of Krishna's boyfriends bring happiness at all times. The well-proportioned ears of the boys resemble perfectly arranged melodies. With their elegantly shaped noses, the boys smell the wonderful fragrances of Vrindavan's flowers. The eyes of the coward boys flit about like the fickle movements of the spots on a gambler's dice. Their handsome and resplendent necks stand out distinctively like Sugriva radiating amongst Rama's legions of monkey soldiers. Their long, beautiful arms rival the trunks of baby elephants. Like the ever-increasing waves of the milk ocean, the chests of the boys are always swelling with happiness. The waists of the boys are as firm as the sides of an elephant. Krishna's friends have very strong thighs that give joy to everyone. They walk on their bare feet, which are as tender as the rays of the moon. The coward boys of Vrindavan far surpass the demigods, and they exist eternally as Krishna's beloved associates. Subal, Sridhama, Sudama, and Vasudama are some of Krishna's intimate boyfriends. Now the intimate girlfriends of Krishna will be described. The delicate feet of Krishna's gopis resemble poetry full of wonderful rhymes. Their slender ankles move with the speed of the mind. As Sita achieved all auspiciousness by obeying the commands of Lakshman, the gopis have become all auspicious because of the incredible beauty of their knees. The thighs of the gopis conquer the splendor of the broad trunks of banana trees used to decorate a festival site. The sweetness of their graceful hips is more inspiring than the expert commentaries on difficult passages of the scriptures. As one cries upon meeting a long-lost friend, seeing their charming bellies, which are shaped like banyan leaves, brings tears of joy to the eyes. Just as repeated chanting of the holy name makes one fearless, the delightful navels of the gopis are endowed with repeated turns. As Krishna is inclined to give mercy to the fallen, he is also very attracted to the thin waists of the gopis. The sweet breasts of the gopis defeat the beauty of the clouds of the monsoon season. As the winter season is endowed with long nights, the gopis have long, graceful arms. Their throats have three attractive lines resembling a conch shell. As Lakshmi Devi's face is wiped by the fingers of Narayan, the gopis' faces are tenderly wiped by the fingers of Krishna. Their noses surpass the beauty of sesame flowers whose fragrance enhances the elegance of spring. Their captivating lotus eyes resemble the merciful glance of the Lord, blessing the world. With their beautiful ears, they always drink the sweet nectar of Harikatha. The splendid curls in their hair put to shame the effulgence in Kuvera's golden city. The hairstyles of the gopis are more attractive than the western direction that is skillfully designed by Varuna, its presiding deity. Srimati Radharani reigns as the best of Krishna's beloved gopis. This beautiful young girl is resplendent with all good qualities such as mercy, sweetness, and vitality. As the crest jewel amongst Krishna's lovers, she possesses all ornaments and all types of emotional mellows. Radhika is a golden Ketaki flower in a garden of prema, or a lightning flash in a cloud of sweetness, or a golden lion on a testing stone of beauty. Radhika is the light of the moon of bliss. Her slender arms conquer the pride of Cupid. Radharani is the splendorous essence of the ocean of loveliness and the enchanting smile of those intoxicated by love. She is a mine of the 64 arts and the precious crest jewel of all good qualities. Radhika's complexion is more golden than a thousand Parvatis. Radhika is also called Shama, which means that her transcendental body is warm in the winter and cool in the hot season. Her breasts are firm, full, and slightly raised, and very beautiful. Although existing since time immemorial, Radhika is an ever-fresh young girl. Radharani is the epitome of beauty and the life and soul of her girlfriends. Though just an innocent young girl, Radharani controls all the goddesses of fortune in the universe. Learned pundits call her Mahalakshmi, tantrics call her Leela Shakti, and bhaktas call her Laudini Shakti. Radhika is ornamented by her dear friends who display all good qualities and move as her reflections. Among all the young gopis, there is one group leader named Chandravali, who is the crest jewel of dalliance. She bestows the bliss of a million moons. As the material nature is endowed with the qualities of passion and ignorance, Chandravali has all good qualities. Just as the eye has the nature to see forms, similarly, her form is the natural embodiment of beauty. The essence of water is taste, rasa, and she is the essence of all rasa. Just as flowers distribute their fragrance to everyone, Chandravali gives bliss to all. Padma, Saibhya, and others serve her as her dearest companions. There is another gopi group leader named Shama Sakhi, who is very dear to Radhika. Chandravali, therefore, though very prominent, is merely another gopi group leader amongst the Braja gopis. All the Brahmanas living in Nanda Baba's capital embody the principles of Bhagavad Dharma. They are extremely merciful and always display sense and mind control, tolerance and renunciation. With great skill, they recite shastras like the Bhagavat and always study the Narada Pancharatra and other Vedic works that corroborate the Bhagavat. They alone qualify for Nanda Maharaja's charity, and only they perform the appropriate rituals and ceremonies. Some of these Brahmanas worship the Aishvarya aspect of Krishna, and others adore the Madhurya feature of the Lord. After thorough study of the 18 branches of knowledge, they have become genuinely peaceful and fixed in their own realizations. It is not surprising that they have never been defeated in debate. Though possessing abundant wealth, they always remain humble and exhibit gentle behavior, friendship, kindness, and compassion to one and all. Their transcendental attributes are not the byproducts of material goodness, passion, or ignorance. What more can be said of their exalted spiritual stature? Although the oil sellers, tumbler salesmen, goldsmiths, pot makers, weavers, and blacksmiths have spiritual forms, they behave like ordinary humans. Commanding the respect of all pious men, they freely distribute their wealth whenever needed. They do not have material bodies, nor do they experience the sufferings of ordinary mortals. The bees of the monsoon season give joy to all the flowers, yet others do not appreciate them. They resemble Vrindavan's Pulinda women, wanton aborigines, who are also not much appreciated, but because of their devotion, they have secured the praises of the demigods. Rows of huge goshalas spread out in all directions in Nanda Maharaja's capital. The four long crystal walls of these goshalas are topped with emerald beams and golden crossbeams that extend beyond the walls. In all corners are ruby cornices firmly attached to the emerald beams. They too have sparkling jeweled surfaces which make them look like jeweled mountain peaks. Just as a wise man is without pride, these goshalas are devoid of pillars. As the intelligence of a friendly person is pure and broad, the goshalas are very clean and expansive. Just as a king's palace has numerous doors, the goshalas have many splendid doors, and they are dust-free and devoid of breezes. Standing in the yards of the goshalas are the best of cows, which are as white as the full moon and have horns as dark as peaks of blue sapphires. The thick, bushy tails of these cows resemble the long hair of the ladies of Vrindavana. Upon seeing Krishna, the cows are overwhelmed with joy and lift up their tails. This looks as splendid as the effulgence of Bhagavan's chakra as it cuts down the demons. Just as a person bows down to respect the holy waters of a tirtha, Similarly, the heads of the cows hang down due to the heavy, thick folds of skin under their necks. Their full milk bags resemble the rotund body of Ganesh. Like the mind, these cows are independent and cannot be easily bound. Sadhakas gain happiness by engaging in austerities, and the cows feel delighted when they are milked. The cows of Vrindavan are called Kamadhenus because they fulfill all desires, just like Chintamani gems. As the summer season is ornamented with blooming Kutaja flowers, the cows are decorated with happy calves. Literary embellishments increase the sweetness of skillfully written poems. Similarly, the varieties of multicolored cows beautify the Goshalas. The Goshalas are alive with herds of calves jumping about. These adorable calves look like clumps of foam from the milk ocean, spots of moonlight cast on the ground, or like ice boulders from Mount Kailash tumbling along the earth. They are the purest of offerings to the demigods. The huge bulls look like crystal boulders or big waves in the ocean of yogurt. Sleeping peacefully in their pens, they look like ancient sages in meditation. Like liberated souls, they freely wander here and there. Their huge horns resemble the tusks of the directional elephants. The high humps on their backs resemble the parasol and fans held above a king. With their red eyes and slow movements, they appear stunned like intoxicated persons. When the bulls let out a loud bellow, it sounds like the boisterous talk of proud men. The skin folds flapping around their necks resemble the long blankets draped over the backs of renunciates. Due to reflecting the light from the domes of the jeweled palaces, it looks like their horns are multicolored. When a whirlwind stirs up the jeweled earth to cover the bulls with jeweled dust, they appear distinguished like the personifications of Dharma. All the cows of Vrindavan are expansions from Goloka. The capital of Nanda Maharaj is decorated with rows of shops made of jewels, which spread out from the crossroads in neat rows. They are equipped with many bright flags that appear like the victory flags of a triumphant king. As oysters are decorated with pearls, the shops are ornamented with long strands of pearls. These shops, which have wide verandas resembling the thick new leaves appearing in spring, are the dwelling places of the merchants. Some shops smell like the spring season, and others are scented with sandalwood, aguru, kasturi, and just the ointments on a lover's chest. Some shops are heavy with the scent of ripe paddy fields, and others are as effulgent as a mine of jewels. Surrounding the town are many rows of small forest groves filled with varieties of multi-hued trees resembling beaches covered with colorful coral. Just as a commander is equipped with many types of elephants and troops, these forests have many types of kunjas and bowers. With their many dangling creepers, the forests resemble renunciates engaged in austerities. Just as rasikas derive pleasure from the playful pastimes of Krishna, similarly, these forests please the birds by providing playgrounds for their pastimes. The Vanadevis wander hand in hand along the forest paths, softened from the sap constantly dripping from the trees. The forest bulls relieve their itching by rubbing their humps against the trees. This action forms lac dust, which mixes with the honey flowing down the trees to form a natural lac, which looks very beautiful when it sticks on the lac-covered feet of the forest goddesses. The whole forest is sweetly scented from the juice of the kakola berries spilling out of the mouths of the wild rams as they contentedly ruminate. The air is also scented from the aromatic bark of the devadaru trees rubbed off by the horns of wild buffalo. The sides of the hill are strewn with branches of the salaki tree, a favorite food of elephants, broken by the tusks of the wild baby elephants, and the ground is covered with bunches of half-eaten grapes scattered by families of monkeys. The Aborigine women who wander through these thick forest groves have dark blue maricha flowers adorning their ears, and the juice of camphor flowers smeared on their hands. Their mouths are fragrant from chewing tambula. Besides the previously described forest of Vrindavan, there are many other forests such as Kamyavan and Lohavan. The Rasala trees and other exotic vegetation in these forests create an extraordinary atmosphere. There are many trees such as mango, coconut, arjuna, banyan, palasa, yellow sal, bal, jambu, ashok, bakula, naga champaka, golden champa, sirasa, lodra, piala, salaki, pilu, kadamba, karavira, and tamal. Vines and shrubs include navamalika, kanaka yujika, lavanga, madhavi, stalapadma, malika, kandali, and tulasi. Lakes full of crystal clear water covered with water lilies and white, blue, and red lotuses lie scattered throughout these forests. These lakes resound with the singing of herons, ducks, swans, cranes, ospreys, and chakravakas. From the descriptions in the first part of this chapter, it is understood that Brajamandal, although completely spiritual, is situated within the material world. A person afflicted with jaundice sees a white conscious yellow due to the disease's effect on his vision. Similarly, a person with mundane vision sees Vrindavana as a material place. Out of his independent will, the Supreme Lord desired to appear in this world as the baby son of two personalities named Nanda and Yashoda, the eternal embodiments of parental affection. What is impossible for the Lila Shakti, the pastime potency of Krishna, who is the origin of all avatars and the ocean of all pastimes? One may object, asking, why does Krishna perform pastimes in the material world? The only reason is to give pleasure to his devotees. In order to reveal the mood of parental affection arising from the activities of babyhood, and so on, Krishna agreed to become the son of Nanda and Yashoda. Accepting their care and attention, the omnipotent Lord covered his majesty with an unprecedented sweetness. By exhibiting all the different stages of boyhood, such as Kumara, Poganda, and Kaishora, the Supreme Lord Krishna appeared like an ordinary human being. But throughout these stages, Krishna remained in his original form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although Madhurya Ras is predominant in Vrindavan, the previous verse has only mentioned parental affection. The reason for this is that all the pastimes with the cows, gopas, and gopis also go on eternally in the spiritual world. But Krishna's babyhood pastimes and the pastimes of killing demons exist only in the Gokula in the material world. Thus one should understand that the sweetness of Bhoma Lila is not available in the spiritual world.